I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Monday, October 26, 2015. Let the record reflect that the time is 3 p.m. Committee members present: Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Coghill, Senator Machuki, Senator Stedman, Senator Wilkowski, and myself, Senator Giesel. Excused absence today is Senator Stoltz. So, Recording Secretary, thank you, Ann Kreckelberg, for being here with us in this special session, and helping us here with the LIO audio is Betsy Dorn. So thanks, Betsy. I don't see your staff, Senator Wilkowski. Ivy Brooke, I understand, or Brooke Ivy, pardon me, that today is her birthday. Well, happy birthday, Brooke, if you're listening to this exciting committee meeting. I was going to bring it up this morning, or today. So today is the first hearing of the Senate Resources Committee in the third special session of the 29th legislature. The goal for this meeting and this special session is to advance a natural gas pipeline project for Alaskans. So today we're going to hear from the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission on its recent ruling on gas offtakes for the North Slope. So some takeaways I'm hoping we'll be able to receive for this committee is, first of all, what is AOGCC? This is a very significant organization that most Alaskans aren't familiar with. As I looked at the statutes, they were established in 1978, so folks should know about them. They had a hearing on gas offtake and the methods for gas offtake, and so I'd like to hear how that went and the discussion there, the criteria they used to evaluate that request, and then to fill us in about their conservation order. I also want to welcome Senate colleagues who are present in the room: Senator Dunleavy, Senator Hoffman, Senator Bishop, and Co-Chair of Finance, Senator McKinnon. So welcome, thanks for joining us. So now, I will welcome the two commissioners from AOGCC, Commissioner Kathy Forrester and Commissioner Dan Seamount, to make their presentation.
Did you get Hoffman?
I did. Didn't I mention Senator Hoffman?
You did.
I thought I did.
Okay. They were just pointing at him.
Maybe he was making jokes or something.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dan Seamount. I'm one of the three commissioners on the Alaska Oil and Gas Commission. Right now we only have two, and that's Chair Forrester and myself. I'm going to start out just because this is, there's two reasons.
And I'm going to keep it to two.
And she's going to keep it to two. See, already she's getting in the way. And she talks a lot. She talks very fast. So I'm going to say a few things before she cuts in and takes over. Now, the number one reason is that the most important thing we're going to talk about today is our decisions on gas offtake. And this was based mainly on engineering, and I'm a geologist. And Commissioner Forrester is best qualified to talk about the engineering part of these decisions. There are four decisions made. And as far as the geology is concerned, the geology of the North Slope has been worked for decades. In fact, hundreds of wells have been drilled up there, and there were at least nine wells drilled before Pearl Bay was discovered. The reservoir is very well understood geologically. The structure is very understood geologically. As far as what we do, we have a long presentation that we won't get into today unless Commissioner Forrester wants to get into it. But mainly what we do is we regulate the subsurface operations of oil fields, not the surface, not the air quality. We make sure wells are drilled safely and efficiently, and we try to ensure that there's no waste of the resource, neither oil nor gas, and that's total oil and gas, not just one or the other. And we make sure that safety is at the top of the list, and that corrective rights are not imposed upon. And did I forget anything?
Off of slide three now.
Mr. Forrester, before we adjourn this hearing.
Okay, we're done. So before we go on, Commissioners, I want to welcome Senator Gary Stevens and Senate President Kevin Meyer. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Kathy Forrester. I'm the Engineering Commissioner, and right now I'm the Chair of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. It's good to see all of you again. I'm sorry you have to be here, but it's good to see you. As we've discussed, Dan and I are here to explain to you the rulings that we recently made on gas offtake from Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson in anticipation of major gas sales from the North Slope in 2025. I'll cut right to the chase and tell you what we decided, and then I'll explain to you the history behind those decisions and, more importantly, what they mean going forward. Assuming I can get this thing to work. Is this the one that I use?
That's not working.
This isn't working.
Probably that one.
That one's not working.
Oh.
Oops.
There you go. So left, right.
I was doing that one, but now it works. Okay, good.
I lift your left leg.
What?
I lift your left leg.
Okay, I keep it up. All right, if I put it down, mine. All right, so the answer is, at Prudhoe Bay, the offtake allowable used to be 2.7 BCF per day, but not really. You all have probably heard me say more times than you cared to that if the fairy godmother of pipelines were to drop us one overnight, if we woke up tomorrow morning and there was a gas pipeline, then we would have an emergency session and take that allowable to zero because it was too soon. So we changed that, the 2.7, but not really, to 3.6, but really. And for Point Thompson, there was no gas offtake allowable because that field had no pool rules. The operator applies for pool rules when they're ready to start operating it. And that's, you know, we have statewide rules that all fields operate under, but when a field comes online, it typically has some special rules that the statewide rules need to be tweaked or new rules need to be added that will allow for that field to be operated appropriately. So Point Thompson had no rules. In anticipation of coming online next year with a gas cycling for liquids removal pilot, it's time for them to have pool rules. And so along with those pool rules, in order to move forward their gas pipeline, they needed an offtake allowable. So they now have a gas offtake allowable after our ruling of 1.1 BCF a day. And these numbers are total gas offtake. That includes fuel. It includes, for Prudhoe Bay, there are tiny sales to little users. The 3.6 includes all of that. The 1.1 includes every offtake that Point Thompson would have.
May I intersperse something at the moment?
Intersperse.
And you're probably going to say it anyway, but when I first started this job in the year 2000, they were talking about putting in a gas line in 2014. And that just scared the hell out of me because we were making 1 million barrels of oil a day and we were using that gas to help make that 1 million barrels of oil a day. And I was thinking if they try to hook up that gas line by 2014, then there's going to be a lot of waste involved. And Kathy and I will be standing in front of a moving train and not be able to stop it. We'll probably get run over. So timing is helping us here. When we're talking about 2025, the timing is right.
Since Dan's already seen my presentation, he's giving it to you early, every chance to give it. I will correct you. It scared the heck out of us.
Nothing. Well,
okay. All right. So you wanted to hear a little bit about what we do. I know you guys are familiar with this because we've talked to you a lot, probably more than you care. But for the record, for people who aren't familiar with us, we are the agency responsible for regulating oil, gas, and geothermal exploration, production, and development in the state of Alaska on all state lands and in state waters. We oversee drilling, well work, well production operations, and reservoir management. Our primary responsibilities are the five that are on the in the handout: protect human safety, protect fresh groundwaters, prevent waste, encourage greater ultimate recovery, and protect relative rights. I've highlighted two of them, not because they're any more important than the other three, but because they're the two that come to play when we make a decision about gas offtake. Those are the two of our statutory responsibilities that are most in the forefront of our minds in those decisions. So encouraging greater ultimate recovery. All of the known gas on the North Slope, known proven gas, resides at Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson, and there's a lot of it. For a long time, that gas has been called stranded because there's no way to get it to market. And as the agency charged with encouraging greater ultimate recovery of all the hydrocarbons, not just the oil, not just the gas, but the combination of the two, it's our job to help to see that this gas does get to market. And keeping with my keeping it clean theme, that says shoot.
That's a new one.
Commissioners, before you go on. So a couple of questions, because I hear things, people have opinions about what gas is available on the North Slope. And you may be the wrong department to ask, or wrong group to ask. It may be the Division of Oil and Gas, but you said that all the known proven gas is in Prudhoe and Point Thompson. So what other potential gas fields are you aware of on the North Slope? And do you have any sense of how much gas is in them? And I'll just pause for a moment to welcome Representative Reinbold. Welcome.
I'll answer first, and I'm sure Dan will correct me. There's the little bitty Barrow gas field that is being used to fuel the city of Barrow, and that we consider that off the table. But other than that, Kaparik is gas poor. Other fields are having gas exported from Prudhoe Bay to them. So in the known production on the slope, nobody else has any significant gas to contribute to a pipeline. The USGS has made an estimate that there's potential of, I think the last number I read was 154 trillion cubic feet of gas yet to be discovered. But Dan and I got in this morning into a little debate over how much of that you can count on. The oil and gas business is a gambler's game, and the potential is only that until somebody discovers it, and so they got to spend some money to discover it, and it's got to be in some place that the federal government hasn't put off limits to us. But then Dan's side of that is, it's there, we're going to get it. But you can say that if you'd like to. He did this morning.
I wasn't that adamant about it this morning, but however, I'll tell you, the trend that the North Slope is on the same trend as runs all the way down east of the Rocky Mountains into the Gulf of Mexico, and it's part of the Laramide orogeny, and I've worked the entire trend all the way down, and I have never seen a part of that trend that is more oil and gas prone. It seems like every well that's drilled on the North Slope finds some gas and finds some oil, and the problem is it is in the past been the economics and the environment and all that kind of stuff, but I'm pretty confident that there is a lot more gas to be found on the North Slope. I could bet my career on it because my
career is almost over.
So let me ask you then about the foothills. I have been told that the foothills is a potential area. Is that anything that you can opine on or have knowledge of?
I can. I have heard that too, and I believe that too, and the people that really have done a lot of work on it are the USGS, the DNR, and the DGGS with the state, and you ought to get them in there and ask them for their opinion on that.
So you've identified the known here, 22 trillion and 6 trillion. Again, this may not be in your lane, but a 42 or a 48-inch pipeline, is it possible for either of those pipeline diameters to drain the North Slope in 10 or 15 years of gas? Do you have any sense of that?
I'm the engineer. Well, it all depends on the pipeline design. It depends on how many compressor stations, what pressure the pipeline operates at, and how many compressor stations are along the way. The amount of gas you can cram into the line is dependent upon the pressure at which it operates and how many compressor stations you put in to keep that pressure up. So, it's probably possible that 28 trillion cubic feet with the right design could be gone in 10 years, but that's a good question for the people that are designing and planning to operate that line.
I will ask them. So my understanding, I'm not a petroleum engineer, but Kathy is, that it's possible to pull down the pressure or to drain an oil field too rapidly so that you actually can't get the optimal amount of gas. And that's part of your role, to make sure that it's optimally developed. Is it possible to do that with a gas field? Is there an optimal amount of draw and speed and so forth?
With gas fields, it works just the opposite. There are two basic kinds of gas fields. There's a pressure depletion gas field, just simple. As you produce it, the pressure drops and nothing happens. And those, you can produce those any way you want. And there's another kind of gas field, it's water drive. There's an aquifer underneath the gas, and as you lower the pressure, water comes in. And in that kind of field, you actually want to pull it as fast and as hard as you can, because as that water comes in, encroaches, the lower the pressure in the area that it encroaches into, the less gas left in that area that the water encroaches into. So for a gas field, the opposite is true. Hurry up, get it out of there. And for a pressure depletion gas field, which is most of the gas fields we have in the state of Alaska, however you want to do it, just fine. But if you have water drive gas reservoirs, you need to beat the water. So it's kind of interesting.
Great. You'll tell us about Prudhoe and Point Thompson, I hope.
Well, the gas is not the issue. You know, timing on the gas is not the issue. It's the timing on getting that gas out so that the oil is protected. So the other half of our mission that comes into mind when we're making these decisions is the prevention of waste. Taking the gas from an oil field or a condensate field before all the oil has been produced will, all caps, cause some of that oil and condensate to be lost. That's not my opinion. That's not somebody's prediction. That's just the same as me saying, when I drop this pen, it's not going to hit you in the face or float up to the ceiling. It's just going to drop. That's just the same guarantee. When you take the gas out of an oil field and there's oil still left, some of that oil is unrecoverable, period. All right. and, you know, there's a lot of oil left at Prudhoe Bay. There's 2.5 billion barrels of oil. As Donald Trump would say, that's huge. And let me repeat it, that is huge. 2.5 billion barrels of oil is about how much oil we've gotten out of Kuparuk Reservoir in its 34 years of production. It's not chump change. And Kuparuk is the second largest oil field in North America. So you don't make decisions about 2.5 billion barrels lightly. You're not trying to make anybody happy. You're not trying to enable you guys to get reelected. You're trying to protect 2.5 billion barrels for the citizens of Alaska. So I guarantee you, Dan and I have lost a lot of sleep worrying about that 2.5 billion barrels. And at Point Thompson, before the latest wells were drilled and we got more data on that reservoir, we thought there was a whole lot more than 200 million barrels of condensate. But the current estimate is that there's 200 million barrels of condensate in the Point Thompson reservoir. And that's about as much oil. It's a little less than the oil that's been produced from Swanson River, and it's over 50 years of production. Again, for people who live on the Kenai Peninsula, that's not chump change. This is a lot to be concerned with, and we don't want to make decisions that might put it at risk.
So, excuse me, Commissioner. I just wanted to welcome Senator Huggins, who just joined us. Go ahead and proceed.
Okay. So, the AOGCC has the task of encouraging that the gas gets to be produced while also making sure that that oil and that condensate isn't wasted or lost forever in the reservoir. And I'll say it one more time, allowing the gas to be produced before the oil is gone and the condensate is gone will reduce the recovery of the oil and the liquids, period. But not allowing the operators and the state of Alaska to take advantage of what might be the only window of opportunity to sell that gas would also be wasteful and certainly wouldn't encourage greater ultimate recovery of that resource.
Question.
So we've been studying the effects of gas sales on the losses versus the timing and getting the ultimate recovery of that gas. since before I got to the commission in 2005.
Commissioner, could you pause for a moment? Senator Machiki had a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Commissioner Forster, you talked about the various types of oil and gas recovery, but could you just touch on a little bit, you know, enhanced oil recovery techniques and perhaps some water flood that may help in not only not wasting oil, but increase the production of gas in the latter years of the reservoir?
Senator Machiki, through the chair, The Prudhoe Bay operators have been doing a really good job of implementing those techniques. Prudhoe Bay is a big reservoir with a gas cap and a big healthy thick oil rim underlain by an aquifer. And so what the operator has been doing as secondary recovery has been injecting water at the base into the aquifer and re-injecting gas into the gas cap for pressure maintenance. So if they pulled out the oil and didn't re-inject the water and the gas, then the pressure would drop and the reservoir energy that allows that oil to come to surface would deplete over time, and the sweep efficiency of sweeping through all those little pore spaces in the rock to get as much out would be less. But the operator has been injecting the gas into the top, injecting the water, seawater and produced water into the bottom, acting as a piston, two pistons coming down and up. But they've also been injecting enriched gas into the oil reservoir itself, and that's the tertiary, the enhanced oil recovery of injecting miscible gas, mixable with the hydrocarbon, to scoop more of it off the rock, to get more of that oil to loosen up from the reservoir and become mobile and produce into the wells. And all of those techniques have been in use and continue to be in use. And as I get into what some of our decisions were, we're going to ensure that those sorts of things and others continue to happen between now and the start of gas sales, and even after the start of gas sales, so that we can do everything we can to accelerate oil production before gas sales and ensure the safety of the remaining oil reserves on in to gas sales. And there's another thing that the Prudhoe operator tried and has had good success with, and it's a little bit funky. Water being heavier than both oil and gas, you generally inject the water at the bottom and the light gas at the top, and you know, gravity keeps them where you put them. But the Prudhoe Bay operator did a pilot to test, and then it has now expanded because the pilot worked, injecting water into the gas cap as a test to see, when we don't have enough gas to keep the pressure up, when we start depleting that gas cap, can we inject water to take its place, or will it just all, because it's heavier, go down, mix in with the oil, and just, you know, ruin our recoveries of the oil? And then, because they've been successful with their pilots, they're expanding the gas cap water injection as well.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you. Commissioner Forster, do you have the ability to revise your ruling, you know, if there's new technology? And I'm actually curious where that power is derived from. Is it through regulation?
It's in our statute.
Okay. And what would that look like, and when would that review happen? Is it
It's in our heads. It's in our fit finding. And what the short answer, we're going to keep an eye on what's going on between now and the start of major gas sales. And there are some points between now and major gas sales when some reports are due and some studies are due to us, and we'll be looking for very specific performance of both the cycling of the Point Thompson liquids and gas and the continuation of the Prudhoe acceleration of reserves. And based on what we see in those studies, we can call a hearing and say, we're going to re-look at this. That's what it would look like. If we saw something that made us think, oh no, we made the wrong decision, we have of our own volition, we can call a hearing and just say, we're going to reconsider this, and all bets are off.
Good follow-up. And the reports that, I mean, I was there this morning and learned about the report that, Stu, if the results from the report, the recycling, don't come back to your satisfaction, then what recourse do you have?
Well, there's a lot, and it depends on what it is. But if say right now the Exxon's premise is that full field cycling wouldn't get a lot more, much more oil, of the condensate out of the ground than just going straight to gas blowdown. But if the cycling pilot demonstrates that that's not true, that there's a lot of, that the pilot operates better than we thought it would, that the condensate yield is richer, that the sweep efficiencies are better in the field, you know, if all those things look different than we think they would look, then the people, you know, Dan and I'll be gone by then, but the people who are here then, or at least I'll be gone, I don't know about Dan, he's never going away, the people who are here then we could say, you can't sell the gas from Point Thompson until you cycle for longer. But Prudhoe Bay, they've been doing a great job on accelerating the oil reserve, so maybe we want to increase the offtake allowable at Prudhoe Bay. Let Prudhoe Bay do all the heavy lifting until Point Thompson has gotten taken advantage of all those liquids. That's what that would look like if we, you know, we feel pretty confident that that's not going to be the case, but we have to leave ourselves a parachute. I feel confident when I drive that I'm not going to have a wreck, but I always wear my seatbelt.
Good. Further questions? I'll let you proceed.
Okay. So we've convinced ourselves after lots of work and paying some really well-respected world-class consultants that the quality of the models that Exxon and BP and the other owners of those resources have put together are much better than anything we could do, and we could certainly not, we could attempt to replicate them, but I don't think we could afford to, because that we don't have the money to do that. They've spent 50 years putting the Prudhoe Bay model together, and it's pretty darn good, you know. And they've had hundreds of brilliant engineers, geologists, geophysicists working on that model, and there's nothing to be gained by gaming it, but we've gotten into it, looked under the hood, pulled things apart and put them back together with consultants, and we've convinced ourselves that they're valid, they should be trusted, and they're good to use. And so after we convinced ourselves of those things, we've been participating with BP and Exxon in studies where they tweak things in the model. We'll try it if this happens. What does it look like if this happens? How about if we do this? And then how does that impact this? So our staff have signed confidentiality agreements and gotten in and played with the BP and Exxon experts on all of those things to come to some good feels about what are the best ways to optimize both liquid and gas recovery from Prudhoe and Point Thompson. And the presentations and the recommendations that BP and Exxon put before us and that our staff put before us are based on those studies. So from the day that I started at the ALGCC, I thought it would be very difficult for BP and Exxon to convince us to approve major gas sales from either of those fields as long as I was here. In fact, over the years, I know you guys have probably heard me say things along those lines. I know Senator Wilkowski is tired of hearing me say, the less they take, the better, the later they take it, the better, the more they do in the meantime to accelerate, and the more they do to mitigate. So I know you've heard that, and yes, shout out, Kathy. But that's all true, and it remains true. And for Point Thompson, you've been hearing me say that the monkey's on Exxon's back to demonstrate to us that cycling first isn't the best answer for greater ultimate hydrocarbon recovery. And I've also been saying to anyone who would listen to me that the operators won't get fully behind more slope gas sales until the timing is right for them. And because of the resource ownership, and their technical experience, when the timing is right for them, the timing is going to be right for us too. So I hope that none of you has to hear me say any of those things ever again.
Your clock's wrong.
Oh, okay, I'll talk faster. So in a public hearing on August 27th, the Prudhoe Bay owners presented testimony in support of major gas sales from Prudhoe Bay starting in 2025. There were some differences between what Conoco and Chevron proposed and what BP and Exxon proposed, and I understand that their differences had more to do with some commercial agreements that they were struggling with, so we tried to stay out of that fray. But all four owners were in support of major gas sales. It was really just a matter of whether their numbers should be 3.6 or 4.1. And remember, I think less is better. And then on September 1st, the Point Thompson owners did something similar for that field. And then we left the records open on both of those hearings till the middle of September because the operators had some unanswered questions that we needed to hear back from them on. So then we closed the record and we tried to get our rulings out within 30 days, and we were probably 32 or 33 days on this one. But I know and some of you guys were asking us, 30 days are up, when you can rule? And we chose to err on the side of taking our time and getting it right rather than beating a 30-day deadline. So we feel really good about having taken our time and come to a decision that we can stand here and support to you. So on October 15th, we issued the order allowing the 3.6 BCF offtake in 2025 from Prudhoe and 1.1 BCF in 2025 from Point Thompson. So let me give you a summary of our rulings. The offtake for Prudhoe Bay, the offtake allowable increased from 2.7 to 3.6 BCF a day, and that includes fuel and all those other uses. In 5 years, BP must provide to us a report on what their oil recovery acceleration activities have been and what the results of them, what they've gotten for us in oil recovery acceleration. We have authorized CO2 injection for EOR purposes, based solely on positive study results. We've charged them with coming back to us with a study on the different places that they were considering injecting the CO2 that's going to be a byproduct from gas production. And
Commissioner?
Yes.
For the public who is listening, EOR?
Enhanced oil recovery.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. I do that too in my hearings. Nobody knows what you're talking about. Spell it out here. So thank you. So CO2 is a commonly used fluid for EOR, but it's not always good. It's one of those things, if it helps you, it helps you a lot. If it doesn't help you, it can hurt you. And it's like taking the wrong pill for your blood pressure condition. And so there's work to be done to determine if CO2 can be an oil recovery enhancer or detractor. And they have to do those studies before they can begin to implement that injection. It was also asked that we consider granting approval for CO2 disposal. And we can, although the LGCC has authority to grant Class 2, EPA Class 2, which is oil field products. If it came out of an oil well, it's a Class 2 lit fluid, and we have authority to just to authorize its disposal. If CO2 that has gone past the custody transfer point and into a plant, it's no longer a Class 2 fluid, so it's outside our jurisdiction. So, it was nice that they asked, but we couldn't say yes or no to that. It's not ours to do. And at Point Thompson, as I said before, as part of granting them all of their approval rules, we granted them an offtake allowable of 1.1 BCF a day. But after 5 years of continuous cycling pilot, and no less than 1 year before full field start of major gas sales. We don't want it to then to come up and say, well, we haven't had five full years, but now we're ready to start. A year before startup, we have to revisit cycling. Let's take a look at what the cycling project has done for you. How effective is it? How rich is the condensate yield? What will we really be leaving in the ground if we go to major gas sales? And they have to come to us, and we have to digest that study and convince ourselves that it's still good to go ahead. We did not put a sunset clause into our ruling because we didn't want to signal concern to lenders. But any of a bad outcome on either of these or any of these three studies could cause reconsideration of our rulings. And that's not intended to be a threat to anybody. Rather, it's intended to be a promise to the citizens of the state of Alaska that we're going to continue to keep an eye on this. We're not going to make a ruling, wipe our hands of it, and move merrily along and never look back. We're going to keep our eyes on it to make sure that as time changes things, as new data comes in, as situations change, that we're keeping an eye on it to make sure that the decisions we made today are still the right decisions for 2025. And unless Dan wants to tell you a joke, I think we're ready for questions. Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. So Is there any loss at Prudhoe Bay from your ruling where you increased to 3.6 BCF per day?
There will be less oil recovered from Prudhoe Bay because major gas sales start. But right now, it'll be a small fraction of what is left in the ground in 2025. Right now, there's 2.5 billion barrels. In 2025, we're hoping there's going to be 1 billion barrel, and it'll be a small fraction of that. But the but the oil equivalent of 22 trillion cubic feet of gas is more than all of that 2.5 billion barrels.
Mm-hmm. Follow up.
So I understand the way you analyze this. Do you look at the value, the monetary value to the state, or do you look at BTU?
We look at BTU.
Okay.
And it's you know, it's rule of thumb, it varies somewhat from field to field depending upon the quality of your oil and the richness of your gas. But the general average, just like saying the average man is 5'10", the average equalizer is 6 MCF per barrel.
Well, yes, follow up, Senator Wilkowski.
Well, the average guy is 5'9", but I would think that even with the loss that we're going to see at the end of the field life, you know, the oil pipeline's not going to be running because there's not going to be enough oil. But just like they do in Texas, they got stripper wells, and there's going to be people coming in there just trying to get some of that extra oil out and trucking it out of there. So there will be some loss. We're going to have total hydrocarbon recovery that's going to be better than not starting now, but I don't think we're going to lose as much as as the bottle says we're going to lose. But there
will be losses, but they're acceptable losses. If you have the choice between stranding 22 trillion cubic feet or leaving even half a billion barrels in the ground, you're probably going to go with the, you know, get that 22 TCF to market. But we're working with BP. BP's doing, you know, this, they don't want to lose that oil either because it has value to them. So they're busting their chops, drilling horizontal multilaterals and gas cap water injection and all these other little things and it accelerating EOR. They're as concerned as we are about accelerating that oil production so that what's left in 2025 is minimal. And they're going to continue those things several years out into the gas sales.
Yes, Senator Wilkowski, follow up.
So as long as I've been here and hearing about this issue, what I've been hearing is that Exxon has always felt it was better to blow down, just simply blow down Point Thompson. Do they still have that position? And can you, so I think it would be helpful if maybe you talked a little bit about what that means and how the state would look at that and how, what happens when you blow it down, because my understanding is once you blow it down, we lose the condensates, period. And also, how the model that you use to analyze whether or not it's better to blow it down or how much you think they can take off without hurting the state's interest, if you can give...
Okay, it's very complex.
Commissioner?
And
before you do that, I just wanted to welcome Senator Kelly from the Finance Committee. Welcome.
And
go ahead, Senator.
My allergies are awful, and I'm wondering if I could get a little more water to enable me to continue lubrication here. Just like, you know, dropping the pan, you know, in a gas condensate field, which Point Thompson is primarily, but Point Thompson is a very complex field. One, it's overpressured, so it's not the normal pressure gradient. When you get down to Point Thompson, you have to weight up your drilling muds or you can have blowouts. And so the costs of drilling those wells with those pressure variations, are accelerating. So the costs are jacked up in drilling these wells. They're not cheap. But the reservoir itself, there's a gas cap that's condensate rich, and there's an oil rim underneath it. And so for both of those reasons, Point Thompson is technically an oil field. Before the last three wells were drilled, we had a picture of Point Thompson that's very different from the picture we have now with the latest three wells that were drilled. And that's another reason that we're going to keep an eye on this stuff. Prudhoe Bay, we're pretty confident that, you know, if that model says something's going to happen, it's going to be pretty darn close to right. But the Point Thompson model is based on a handful of wells rather than a few thousand wells. So every time you drill a well, you're going to change that model. So before these last three wells were drilled, the model that of that reservoir we had said that there was a richer condensate yield than we now think there's going to be. And it also said that that oil rim at the bottom, even though it still says it's highly viscous, it was the oil model thought it was a couple of hundred feet thick, and now it appears more to be like 40 or 50 feet thick. Now that we have better, because before we didn't have enough wells that penetrated it deeply enough to really get a grasp on how thick that oil rim was. But now we feel more confident that it's only 50 feet thick. And as I said, it's highly viscous. So as we worry about liquid recovery, we worry about that condensate, but first we worry about the oil. Because once you start doing anything to that gas cap, you're jeopardizing the oil. You want to get the oil out of the ground first, then you worry about the gas and the condensate. So let's worry about that oil. 50 feet of oil, or an area as big as Point Thompson, again, isn't chump change. But a 50-foot thick, highly viscous section that's 9,000-10,000 feet deep in an overpressured, really, really expensive wells isn't economically feasible. Let me explain. Or technically feasible. So you drill, in order to get that viscous oil out of the ground, you have to drill horizontal wells, really long horizontal wells. And you have to produce them really slowly, because when you've got a viscous oil rim with gas above it and water below it, water is more viscous than gas, but it still flows pretty easily relative to viscous oil. So think about if you had a container and it had an inch of peanut butter in it, and then it had a foot of gas above it and a foot of water below it. And you were able to stick a little straw with some holes in it into the middle of that little inch section, and you started sucking on it, it would probably be about 5 seconds before all you were getting was air and water. So that's graphic, simple, layman terms as I can put it, what would be Exxon's challenge in trying to produce that oil? So it would probably cost, I'm only guessing, and these are orders of magnitude, probably cost them somewhere between $50 and $100 million to drill a well to try to get that oil out. And in an oil reservoir, you typically don't drill a well. You drill an injector and a producer pair to keep your pressure and try to sweep more oil. So you're looking at $100 to $200 million for a well and a well injector pair, producer injector pair, that's going to produce maybe a couple hundred barrels a day for a week, a month or two, and then be dead? Would you make that investment? I don't think so. So, you know, we can't make an operator do something that's going to cost them money and never make them a cent. So the current model, that's what it looks like for that viscous oil. So we're comfortable that with current technology and current costs, it can't be done. It just can't be done. And that's for the oil. And now I'm going to leave the oil and talk about the condensate, unless you have questions that you want to ask right now.
Oh, no, I think you answered it, because you talked about 200 million barrels of condensate, and I remember hearing over the years it seemed like it was a lot more than that. And but you're saying basically there's no economically recoverable oil?
The oil room is not economically recoverable.
At what price?
Any price we've ever seen.
$100, $110.
Oh, gosh. I think $1,000 might be pushing it. I haven't done the economics, but, you know, if the well costs $100 million, if a well pair costs $100 million, you're going to have to get a boatload of oil out of there or have, it's like the $100 apple. You don't have to sell very many, but, you know. Anyway, so then we move to the condensate. Before we drilled these latest wells, we had some 1970s vintage, what's called drill stem tests. Just, you know, you try to up your drill pipe, get a little bit of a representative sample of the fluid, and then you analyze it and see what it's like, and then you make some extrapolations based on, well, the pressure was this, and now it's, you know, chemical engineering hoodoo that you use to try to predict what your recoveries are going to be in condensate yield and what the gas is going to, how everything's going to behave. And so we had that, and so we were optimistic that the recoveries could be as much as 300-400 barrels per MCF or per million. And so we, well, that's a lot. But now it looks like it's going to be maybe, it's going to be a lot less than that. I forget the number, but it's a lot less than that. And so that's part of it. But the other part of it is, even if that were it, when you do cycling, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get the liquids out without dropping the pressure. Because in a condensate field, when you drop the pressure below the dew point, the condensate, which, you know, it behaves funny at these high pressures and temperatures, it's in a dense fluid phase. It's kind of acts like a gas, but it's not. So it comes with the gas. But if the pressure drops below the dew point pressure, and it's dew point pressure is independent, is particular to the reservoir. Every field has its own. And but whatever that dew point pressure is, if the pressure in the reservoir drops below that, then the condensates start dropping out in the reservoir. And when they start dropping out in the reservoir, two bad things happen. One, they stay there, and it's really bad. And two, they drop out near the wellbore, so they start decreasing the permeability to gas, which is what, you know, into oil. They start clogging up the pore spaces and reducing your well's productivity, both of which are bad. And so, just a rule of thumb, in a condensate field, you want to keep the pressure above the dew point by, you know, you pull a little gas out, strip the liquids out, and get it back in, and, you know, you stay above the dew point by doing that cycling. Well, Point Thompson, lower than expected condensate, lower than hoped for condensate yield, we're at the dew point. So the minute we take a puff of gas out there, we've dropped. So, if we could ask for more worse things, we would, but we can't. So, you know, it's just kind of sucks to be Point Thompson if you're trying to produce liquids. And so a third thing that happens is the permeability of the reservoir and the compartmentalization or non of the reservoir affects the sweep efficiency of a cycling project, and you don't want to be too good or too bad. If your permeability is too good, you've got your producer here and your injector here, and what you hope is that as you inject into your injector, the injection sweeps out in a circular flow. In circular flow, it gives you a big sweep. But if your permeability is too good, and what's going to happen is you're going to just have a line drive. You're just going to be cycling it. You know, your fluid's going to go straight from your injector to your producer and never sweep the rest of that reservoir. So that when you're injecting, you're hoping to push those that condensate rich gas towards your producer. But if you got a line drive going, it's not going to happen. So that's what the cycling pilot is going to help us determine. Right now, we're afraid that the permeability is too good and that there might be some compartmentalization that limits the sweep. But we, with as few wells as we have, all we know about the model is that it's wrong. You know, it's not right. We don't know how and where. But based on what we know right now, the prediction is that it's not going to work. But as we drill a few more wells and as we get production performance in that cycling project, we'll fine-tune it and we'll know better. But the data we have right now says full-scale cycling isn't going to be economical, and that just by putting in enough producers in the right places, you'll get a significant portion of that condensate out just by blowing it down. That because the cycling won't be efficient, it's not going to buy you as much as you hoped it would. And that's the belief right now. Did that explain to you what you were concerned about?
Any follow-ups in your roller coaster?
Yeah, so I've heard some people say over the years that they didn't think the gas cycling, the way it was being done, was the most efficient or the best way to do it. Do you have any reason to believe that's true or not true?
No, I don't. Our staff, one of the things, you know, I was mentioning that our folks participated with BP and Exxon and Conoco and Chevron in both of the models doing what ifs, and a lot of the time with the Point Thompson models, what if you put a well here, what if you put a well here, what if you inject this and produce. So we worked really hard with them to try to optimize the design of the cycling, and we had a world-class consulting firm that does this kind of stuff everywhere behind us, whispering in our ears, asking this question. So it's possible that we did something wrong. I'm sure, you know, we're not perfect, but we did our best, and we had some of the smartest minds in the world working on it. So if we made a mistake, it was an honest one.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
Just for me, the timeline on the cycling and some of the wells, so are they going to be a different scope of wells, or are they going to do a timeline of different wells? And just give us kind of a, I know we're looking towards 2025 for gas, but help us understand the delineation timeline.
Senator Coghill, through the chair. The hope is to start cycling up sometime next year. And they have two wells that they thought were going to be all they needed for the small-scale cycling project. But as I understand it right now, there is going to be an additional well drilled. And they'll cycle until such time as they have major gas sales, or until such time as they convince themselves and us that they're losing money cycling and it's not doing any good. Mm-hmm. And the wells, the same wells that are being used for cycling, will be used for production. Senator Machicki.
Just curious if globally you know of a low-pressure condensate reservoir that's been, or similar less viscous heavy hydrocarbon that's been produced effectively with water flood only. And the question is, if the gas cap is removed from Point Thompson, is there any hope for future recovery through other enhanced means?
Okay, you were asking, am I familiar with a similar condensate reservoir that's been produced with water flood? No. I'm not familiar with water flooding a gas reservoir. But there are successful gas cycling projects around the world. There are none with as complex and high pressure of a reservoir as Point Thompson, and that's part of the cost challenge to Exxon. If you got a reservoir that's got close to 10,000 psi reservoir pressure, you got to have compressors that can get it up higher than that to push it down, and those aren't cheap. So that's one of the constraints is. There is nothing in the world, there is no gas condensate reservoir in the world that has been produced through gas cycling that has the challenges that this one does.
The fuel wouldn't be cheap either.
Yeah, the fuel, so they would burn up a lot of that gas you're hoping to sell later, just fueling the project.
Mm-hmm. So Commissioner Forster, I think about the Point Thompson settlement agreement. And a factor in that was the removal of the condensates first, and the requirement was by 2016. So I know that the pipeline is in to remove those condensates, and I believe they're projecting 10,000 barrels a day of that. Am I close?
That's all what I'm hearing, too.
Okay.
You know, things change, so the best answer would be the one that Exxon gives you.
So if they can't remove gas for commercialization until 2025, based on your conservation declaration, what will they do for the next 10 years if the condensate can't be cycled and secured?
Again, that's going to be their call, but what I understand is that their plan is to cycle until such time as major gas sales start up. And so their choice is, until there's a gas pipeline, which isn't expected to be until 2025, their choices are cycle or shut in.
Yes. Okay. Even though the cycling may not be productive, and the facts are rather expensive.
Then it's going to be their choice whether to continue to cycle to try to get some more liquids down the pipe or just shut in and wait. And that's going to be their call.
Okay. Yes, Senator Cottrell.
Going back over to our Prudhoe Bay unit, I thought that they were already using some CO2. So that has not been true. so.
Well, there's CO2 in the gas, and all of the gas that they're producing at Prudhoe Bay that's not being used for fuel is being reinjected into the gas cap. Some of that gas is CO2.
Is that what you call enriched gas?
No. That's just the produced gas that goes into the gas cap. The enriched gas goes into the oil part of the reservoir. That's enriched with some of the lighter ends of the liquids, or the heavier ends of the gas, of the hydrocarbon gas that enrich the gas. And so CO2 is sometimes used instead of hydrocarbon gas as an EOR. It is injected into the oil section of the reservoir to help free up some of the oil to make it movable.
That is happening now.
No. All the CO2 at Prudhoe, it happens all over the world in the right reservoirs. We don't know that there are places at Prudhoe that it can work.
It hasn't been proven yet.
It hasn't been proven.
That's what I misunderstood. I thought that...
All the CO2 is being reinjected, but into the gas cap, where its sole use is for pressure maintenance. It's taken up space.
That's a misconception I had. I thought it was being used for...
EOR. CO2 is used worldwide for EOR, but... The gas at Prudhoe Bay, the CO2 EOR, is just taking up space in the gas cap.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Warakowski.
So the 200 million barrels of condensate that you talked about, is that economically recoverable? Do you foresee that full amount being recovered? And that's number one. And number two is, it seems like it's a relatively unexplored basin. Do you have any expectation that there might be a lot more on it? Undiscovered condensate there?
As they delineate the field, as they produce it and get, they have techniques for getting a better understanding of the size of the field just by producing it. They'll learn if it's a little bit bigger or a little bit smaller. They might find something they didn't anticipate. Look at Prudhoe Bay. We keep finding little things there. But as far as how big the gas cap is and what the condensate yield of it is, once we start producing it, we'll get a pretty good, once we start that pilot, we should get a pretty darn good feel for what we've got and be able to say, yeah, we made the right decision, or no, it needs to be tweaked.
Yes, follow up, Senator Warakowski.
And then, so I've also heard that there's talk about going from 10,000 barrels a day to 70,000 barrels a day. What's the...
That would be if they did a full field cycling project.
What's the likelihood that that might happen?
I would say it's less than 10% based on what we think right now. We wouldn't have granted an offtake if we thought it was the likely scenario was going to be full field cycling. We don't, based on what we believe about the reservoir right now, we don't think that's going to happen. But that's why we're asking them to revisit it with us after they've got 5 years of cycling. We'll know a heck of a lot more. Or as Dan will say, a hell of a lot more about what's going on then. And if we need to make a change, we can and we will.
Yes, follow up, Senator.
And then the offtake for 1.1 BCF a day, is when are they allowed to start doing that, and how much condensate loss does that result in?
Well, they'll start using some of that gas for fuel the minute they start their cycling project. It'll be a tiny bit of that 1.1, but they will start using a little bit for fuel. And I don't have a good number on the losses that will associate with that, but I can get you an answer.
Thank you.
Good. Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you. Commissioner Forster, has AOGCC ever done its own reservoir modeling? You had mentioned earlier that the modeling that's at your disposal is sort of above reproach, and it seems like that we don't do our own because of the time that it would take to collect that and the cost. But so my question then is, what criteria do you use as a commission to determine that their reservoir modeling is so good?
Okay. At Point Thompson, the consultant that we hired actually did build a model based on what all the data that was made available to them, that, well data, the actual facts. And their model pretty closely replicates Exxon's. It's easier to make a model when you have limited data and no production. So the Point the cost and difficulty of the Point Thompson model wasn't the concern to us. It's the cost and difficulty of a Prudhoe model. To make a model based on thousands of wells and 50 years of production is, or whatever it is, 30, 40 years of production, is more challenging, and it was a lot. It would cost us millions and millions and millions of dollars to replicate what they have done. And you know, even if it cost us $1,000, that's $1,000 we don't need to spend if we're confident that what they've done is technically valid. And we're in there. We've checked all of their assumptions. We've checked every input they put into the model. We've got to do special cases and what ifs. And if we can do all of that for free, a nickel's too much to spend on our own model.
Follow up, Senator Costello.
Are you aware of any innovation or technology being developed to make reservoir modeling less costly and time-consuming?
I am not, but I'm sure people have been working on that since the reservoir modeling came into vogue in the late 70s. But a lot of it's just it takes time. You have to acquire data. You have to pay people. You have to input things into computers. You have to history match. You have to fact check. You have to some things just take time. And when it takes time and people, that costs money.
Any other questions? So, Commissioner Forrester, if the gas pipeline were somehow constructed sooner than 2025, it was ready to go, your decisions, your conservation decisions, mark 2025 as the first offtake. What would happen then? Would you be reapproached about a sooner? Okay, and then you would just evaluate. Good.
Yeah, as I said, you know, we're going to keep an eye on this and keep second guessing our decision, not as a threat to the operator, but as a promise that we want to make sure that, you know, we've only got one chance to do this. We want to do it right.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your presentation. You know, I think, again, as I said, lots of Alaskans don't know about the existence of your commission and the significant role you're playing in getting Alaska gas to Alaska citizens. So thank you for your work. Thanks for detailing the decision. I certainly hadn't read it all, the four of them, in detail, so thanks for the Reader's Digest version with all of the peanut butter and so forth. I also want to thank Representative Shelley Hughes and Senator Vasquez, who have joined us briefly here. So our next meeting will be determined. We do have a couple other resource-relevant topics that may be brought forward during this special session. So at this time, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 4:02 p.m. Thank you.